Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Welcome to Tech Talk, Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, LinkedIn announced 800 new jobs for Ireland. I'll be joined by the country lead in just a few minutes' time. We'll hear from an Irish company looking for you to take your photos off your phone and onto your wall. Plus, I'll be joined by the CEO of Republic of Work to hear about the tech scene in the Rebel County. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or tweet with hashtag TechTalkNT. But first, on Thursday morning, tech giant LinkedIn announced 800 new jobs for its Irish office, bringing the headcount in Ireland to 2,000. I'm joined now by the head of LinkedIn Ireland, Sharon McCooey. Sharon, thank you for joining me. It's been a good news week for you guys, but before we talk about the new jobs and the roles and so on, give me a bit of a scene setter as in terms of the company's presence here in Ireland.
So LinkedIn started in Ireland 9 years ago. We are 1,200 people today. It's a full functioning headquarters, so sales, marketing, engineering, analytics, finance, HR, all the things you'd expect.
And it's interesting, so everybody that I know kind of has LinkedIn profiles, and for such a long time, everyone had one but didn't really know how to use it. But it has become like the social network for business purposes. The amount of interesting ideas or articles that you'll find on it, and the networking element, which was a dirty word for a while, it really does happen. The platform has evolved a lot in a short period of time.
So definitely Reid Hoffman's original idea 16 years ago was that people would network online and help each other out. And initially, I suppose that was the nucleus of the idea. That's probably where it looks like today. But you're 100% right. The network effects for the 635 million members, the fact that they're all over the world, the fact that there are now 2 million members in Ireland on the platform, the fact that we're doing business literally all over the world when I looked at where all of the member connections are from Ireland just recently. Just a significant amount of engagement, people engaging for opportunities, not only in getting a job, but also in terms of things like getting financing for a startup, looking for VC money, looking for connections, looking for customers. It really, it really helps from a career perspective and also from an opportunity perspective, and that was always the idea.
Mm-hmm. And so, as we said at the beginning, the new jobs are on the way. What sort of roles are they going to be doing? And because again, when we, like as consumers, use these products, you don't really think of the stuff that goes on in the background. So as you continue to expand your team, what are the jobs?
So a number of areas, and they change. There's probably about 50 different jobs in total. There are a lot in sales and marketing. So marketing is everything from trying to understand the member, help the member understand what LinkedIn can help them with. Then there's analytics. So we have an economic graph team. We also try to help governments, universities, other NGO agencies look at skills in the world. What skills are going to be needed in the future, and how we can help bridge from an education perspective. There's also an online learning platform with about 30,000 courses. So if you're going for a new job, or if you've identified that you want a new job, you can help. There's lots of online skills courses, everything from Microsoft Excel to how to get into artificial intelligence.
Oh, that's great. So the platform will continue to evolve. It's not just the online CV anymore. You do have sort of that expansion and that breadth of things that you can do.
Oh, absolutely. So I see significant developments around the online development piece of that. I mentioned already the number and breadth of courses, but also people can develop their own career there in terms of their own expertise. So if you're an expert in podcasting, you can show your expertise out there, both to educate others, but also to get additional customers for your own career as well. So it's a two-way thing.
Mm-hmm. And just your own involvement then, are you based in Ireland full-time? Are you travelling around to all the different bases? You know, what exactly does your role entail?
So a couple of things. I spend a week in the US every 6 weeks. So spend a lot of time with headquarters. Those relationships have been key to the success in Ireland in terms of both understanding the company culture, values, what we're trying to do, connecting with the executives and then bringing that back to the Irish operation and ensuring that everyone is successful. But to date, I've also, over the last 9 years, been part of the expansion team. So I've been part of the team that has set up the other offices around the world. So when I started at LinkedIn, there were less than 1,000 people and only 50 million members. So it's been a significant journey. We're a 14,000 person company today globally. I've set up seven of the offices around the world, which involved expansion into Brazil, into Singapore, into Hong Kong, and all of our European offices, France, Germany, Sweden, Switzerland, Italy and Spain. So it's been a fantastic journey.
Wow, global journey as well. And when you, because LinkedIn is sort of, you know, again, it's thought of as, you know, getting a job or connecting to a new job, the company culture must be important. So if you're traveling the world and helping create these new bases, how do you ensure that your own company culture is good from the outset and is a place where people want to work?
Great question. So it's all about the original team. So the first 20 employees, the first 50 employees, they have been the bedrock and the foundation. So when you put down really good foundations at the beginning, ensuring everybody understands the culture and values, it multiplies from there. Then the whole network effects take hold. And then similarly, when we open up other offices around the world, so for example, our Dubai office was seeded with a team from Dublin. So original Dublin employees went out and they set up the Dubai office. And so that we've done that a lot around the world. So if you seed with a team of people who fully understand the culture and values, then that really works. Mm. And it's great when you walk into any of the offices around the world, you'd find that same culture and values.
Yeah, it always intrigued me. I was at Microsoft's HQ in Seattle, and they have these core values. And if you go to the office in Sandyford, the core values are the same. And it's always impressive when a company manages to do that, because the worst thing, I think, is you have a global brand and every outlet that you go to just feels different. It's an impressive thing to do. Have you noticed in the time that you have been with the company that what matters to employees, particularly younger employees, has changed? Because there was a notion of go and work in a tech company and you get a beer keg on a Friday and a foosball table. Have you seen that the priorities have shifted somewhat?
So our employees are primarily millennials. And it's a very much, I find from the millennial perspective, two or three things. But the first and most important one is the purpose. Mm-hmm. So in terms of LinkedIn's a purpose-driven company, our vision is to create economic opportunity for every member of the global workforce. That might sound like a dream statement, but that's about like practically helping people find jobs, helping people find their dream job, helping people upskill. So that purpose. So people like to know that at LinkedIn around the world, every 8 seconds, someone gets a job using LinkedIn. So things
that's
like
that.
That's
a great stat.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I love that.
I mean, it's absolutely amazing. So when you leave work in the morning or you come to work in the morning and then you're going home in the evening, you can say, X number of people actually got a job because of the work I did today. And it really changes your perspective on things and puts some things into perspective after a while. So that's fantastic. Uh-huh. So that purpose, I would say, number one. And then the second thing is employers who value people holistically. So look at everything from training, learning, development, wellness, being able to talk about what's going on in your life, whether that's a mental health issue, whether that's expanding my family. So having like family first policies, having mental health and well-being ambassadors and first aid ambassadors, all of those things are super important for the employee experience.
Mm. And again, in the tech sector, and I think in Dublin in particular, because we have so many of the tech companies, there was a period of maybe 2 or 3 years where people who had a valuable skill set in the tech sector were just going from one company to the next company to the next company. Is the retention rate something that you are conscious of? And how do you ensure that people who do come and take these new jobs stick with you?
So, great question. Two things. We've always been intentional about being additive to the Irish economy. So in terms of, it has never been our thing about, you know, taking an entire team from another organization, because that's something that's not long term. That doesn't set down for good foundations. That's probably some other culture rather than your own, etc. So we've been very keen that we've been additive to the employee base in Dublin. So that means additional graduates and training them. It means taking our returner scheme in terms of that we've recently launched, which encourages people who have been taking time out of the workplace to come back to work. And so that's something that we've in all of our new roles that we are making sure that people can avail of our returner scheme.
And is that something that people are interested in and are taking up? Because, you know, again, we just saw stats a few weeks ago from the ESRI who were saying, you know, there's a huge gap for people with life experience, previous work experience. And everyone was kind of just staring at these stats going, women who left the workplace to have kids could come back in because they've got the life experience, they have the work experience and the want to get back in and get their hands dirty, I suppose.
Yeah, so we've been doing quite a number of coaching sessions mm-hmm. in regard to that. And that's something that we will continue to do and encourage other employers to do. It's an untapped talent pool, but it's something where you need to have specific programs in place to allow that. And the needs are, and what we've found, because we thought we could have a one size fits all, but then we realized after a while, different people, depending on how long they've been out of the workplace, have mm-hmm. different requirements. And depending on what their job was or what they've been doing with either their home or working on volunteer and NGOs over some period of time, they can have different skills. So 100% agree, they have life skills, but we're very much keen to have an a la carte program to help people get back to work. And that was our finding from our returner program.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so you mentioned there that like a lot of your workforce is millennials. Do you anticipate that it'll be recent graduates that take up the new roles, or are you going to just throw the net wide and see what comes in?
Oh, definitely the net is going to be thrown wide mm-hmm. In terms of, and we have been very specific about this particular announcement that we are opening up all of our roles to the returner program. And we're definitely looking to, because we piloted the returner program last year, we had a lot of learnings. And so we anticipate that in this particular round that we would have a much more diverse work talent pool.
Mm. And are you impressed by the skill set that recent graduates have? Because this is, again, something that comes up every now and then. You know, are we preparing our young people to go into the workforce? Are they coming out the finished product, or are they coming up malleable so that you can then turn them into whatever you need it to be?
So we get graduates from all over the world to take up our jobs. So each country has different skill sets and different. So we find that the combination of all of the graduates from all over the world, both they are able to help each other. Mm-hmm. And then we also, again, I mentioned LinkedIn has a number of online courses, and then we have a lot of offline courses as well. So I think everything in life, it's an ongoing learning these days. So everyone needs to be malleable in some regards, because even myself, you know, I'm constantly learning on the job all day, every day. And I think it's that sort of a mindset that we need to look at from a career perspective. And as an employer, that's how we look at it.
Now, I know you want people for the Ireland office, but if someone comes in, is there the potential that they could go to one of the other global offices? And is there, because you know the way everyone gets that itch in their late 20s of like, I want to see the world, but you can do that. You can move to a different country. Is that something that LinkedIn facilitates?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a lot of people who started at LinkedIn in Dublin who are now in another LinkedIn office around the world. I call those my LinkedIn Ireland alumni. I have a constantly update them on what's going on. There's some of them right now that I'm hoping that will return to Dublin for as LinkedIn alumni, but coming back from having had a great experience mm-hmm. over the last couple of years in one of the sunnier cities around the world, in Singapore and Sydney and San Francisco. And in addition to that, we're also attracting people from LinkedIn offices around the world, because LinkedIn Ireland has a fantastic reputation among the LinkedIn offices around the world. Mm. It's considered extremely vibrant, and in Dublin is considered Dublin as a city is considered a livable city. So yeah, we're seeing it. So it's a both way. We definitely see lots of our employees go to other offices, but we also see people come from LinkedIn offices to Dublin.
And is there an element of the remote work? Because like we know, and it's a crappy side of a good news announcement every time that happens now in Dublin, of like, where are these people all going to live? The fact that you have the global office and the nature of the work, I mean, is there the possibility of remote work or working from home a few days a week? Or do you very, very much need to be like at the desk in Dublin the whole time?
So most of our jobs are in Dublin and in the office. And the reason for that is because so many of our employees are new to the job. It's very much about getting up to speed, going through that induction process. We're a high growth company, so there's always lots of change. So obviously any job can be done remotely, and there's flexibility in terms of if you need to, you know, do something and, you know, need
do your
to
commute or whatever it is.
Yes, or you know, have your the fridge delivered. Of course, there's no problem working from home from that perspective.
Yeah.
But most of the jobs are based in the Dublin office. However, just to your point in regard to, you know, where would people live? I mean, if you think about that returner scheme that I talked about, I mean, that's people who are already in Dublin or in Ireland, and who are already here in the country. So in terms of where would they live?
So they're already living here. It's they're just utilising them.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a participation rate thing in terms of, obviously we're very close to full employment, but our participation rates are not at the level that they could be at. And so I think this is an opportunity of people who are already living here.
Yeah, it's a massive untapped network when you think about it in those terms, when you look at the skill sets that are required. And we do have people. It's also, you know, a resilience. You know, you have to build yourself up to be able to enter back into the workplace, whether you took time off to look after a parent who was ill, to have a child, just for a career break. Having the balls to go back into the workplace is something that's impressive and should be sort of applauded to a certain extent.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know, Jeffsy, but that is actually my return to work story. So when I started at LinkedIn 9 years ago, I was coming back from having spent 3 years off with my two young children at the time. So that sort of is also the nucleus of that returner program. I mean, it's all about, so the first thing I did was I created a plan. I wrote down what I was looking for, and then but it's also about the confidence. It's also about the interview skills. So definitely, the advice I would give to anyone would be to, you know, believe in yourself, write a plan, and there's opportunity out there. There are 46,000 jobs, for example, today open on LinkedIn in Ireland. And there's 20 million jobs around the world. So, you know, there definitely exists opportunity.
Well, I'm a big believer in the if you can see it, you can be it. And you are a good testament to that. Thank you so much and best of luck with the recruitment process.
Thank you very much, Jessie. Thank you.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so. TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address. Well, now, while the weather has been hit and miss, we are officially in summer, and that means summer holidays are coming up. You'll be out and about, no doubt taking photographs of family and friends. But are you guilty of leaving them sitting on your device? I'm joined now by Patrick Ryan of the canvasworks.ie. Patrick, you're very welcome to the programme. A busy time of year.
Yeah, that's right, Jess. I mean, we actually, it's funny you should say that, because we have a little phrase that we use on the back of some of our prints, which is that photos mean more when they're printed. So, and that's really what it's about. It's about not leaving your photos to linger and fester on your device, whatever that device happens to be. But it's about, you know, making good use of them, taking the best of them and printing them and turning them into some very interesting wall decor. And that's really what the Canvasworks does. So people come onto our site, thecanvasworks.ie, and they would very simply select a product, whether it's a canvas print or a framed print or one of our wood mount prints, and they'll upload the image, crop it to the size that they've selected, and see a fantastic preview of it either as a canvas or in the frame. And print it, and then we get to work, and within about, you know, typically 5 days or thereabouts, something will arrive for them, and that's a fabulous piece of wall art that they can put up on the wall. And really, it's just a great way of taking those moments, you know, and we're all taking them, hundreds and hundreds of them, thousands and thousands of them, uploading them onto social media, and that's great. So photo sharing is obviously a huge part of our life, but those special ones, those important ones, those memorable ones, there's still a huge interest and demand for people to do something with those, whether it's a single photo or whether it's a collage. And of course, these days, because the file quality on your mobile device now, as you know, Jess, the file quality is just incredible, really. You know, they've to an extent overtaken SLRs or compact cameras, and they're always on you. So people are taking those photos, but but where we come in is helping them to really turn them into something special.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of systems, right? And I have this system whereby every 6 weeks, come hell or high water, I am printing my favourite photographs from that last period of time. And I have sort of a montage wall in my apartment and I love it. As a local business, and as an Irish business, how have you found the competition and, you know, enticing customers to you when you do have the big players who will print your photographs, when you do have the pharmacies who will print your photographs, when you have the online services that will print your photographs? How do you guys stay afloat and ensure that you are kind of getting the eyes of the customer?
Yeah. Well, that's a really good point. And in many ways, the photo market and our market is quite similar to other sectors, whether it's retail or grocery. And that is a story of Irish companies, small Irish companies like ours, competing with some of the big international players. And of course, there's a role for both. There's a place for both, whether it's your really small local player, someone like us, someone like the Canvas Works, maybe a little bit more national. And we're all able to compete with the bigger players, with the bigger international players, maybe not always on price, but actually, thankfully, Irish customers don't just want price, they want value. And that's, I think, where we can come in, because we can offer fantastic personalised service in a way that maybe the bigger scaled up international players simply can't. And I'll give you like a simple example of that. What we are able to do, a lot of the bigger companies will simply filter out when you upload a photo that maybe is a little bit low resolution. They'll just straight out say, look, this isn't suitable. And that's great. That works for the bigger players. What we're able to do is see that, intervene in person, talk to them and say, actually, you know, that's just a thumbnail or that's just a screen grab. Have you got a higher res photo? 9 times out of 10, the customer does have a higher resolution version of the photo, and we can get that and turn it into the right quality print. So there's just a small practical sort of an example. And I do that. We do that all the time with customers, because amazingly, the tech is so advanced that some people still just aren't quite sure about the file quality. So they'll be using, let's say, a screen grab from their device rather than the actual JPEG, you know?
Yeah, actually explain that a little bit, because again, you know, as you say, screen grab. So someone puts up a photograph of me and my friends on Instagram, I'll screen grab it and then want to print it, and it'll come out looking crap.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to be so careful with the screen grab, or things like compressed files that come over on WhatsApp or some of the other messaging apps, you know, those files are going to be compressed. They're not the high quality original JPEG that will be sitting in your camera roll. So I suppose what we're able to do is just take that little bit of extra time to communicate, to pick up the phone. And, you know, you won't get that level of service from some of the international players, and say, we'll be able to say, look, that's a screen grabber, that's a WhatsApp file. Can you go back? Can you get the original file? And customers are more than willing to do that. They're more than willing. They just need to be contacted. So there's an example, really, of how we compete. But we're also competing. Certainly, the Canvas Works is competing on innovation. So we rolled out our iOS app about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, and that's been very successful. And so you've got to compete. You've got to be able to offer this product, this service, where your customers are, and where they are right now is on mobile devices. So the iOS app is very important. We're looking now, the next phase is looking at chatbots and how we can automate the service using chatbots. So for example, just within Messenger, there's new technology now that allow you to actually entirely order a photo print through the Messenger app, you know. So there's another element of how we're innovating and competing with the bigger players.
I want to jump back to the file type, because if people are listening to this now, and very often if you go on holidays with a group of friends, or, you know, like in my parents' case, if you've got the grandkids over and you're taking photographs, and we're all taking photographs and sharing them on WhatsApp and so on.
Sure.
If you want to get photos printed, what is the best way? Obviously, if you have the original file, great.
Yeah.
But say if my dad wants to get a photograph that I have printed, what's the best way for me to send it to him and then him to get it printed in the best quality possible?
Well, what I often use and what I would advise to most people is integrate Dropbox with your mobile device. That's a great sort of repository, really. You know, if you're using Dropbox properly, or any of the other cloud-based photo storage apps, Google have a great one as well. That would be a great way to ensure that seamlessly over Wi-Fi, just whenever you're on a Wi-Fi network, your photos are uploading to the cloud, and use those those. And actually, we do that all the time, and I always suggest that to people. Get a little bit organized, set up some Dropbox folders, and then move those images into, let's say, subfolders if you want to organize your photos, and then use it from there. So source your original files from there. Now, sometimes you'll just have to go and say, in that example with your father, you know, email the file to him, because like, you know, that's where the original file, an email or some sort of a Dropbox kind of facility, is the best way to share those photos, you know. Mm. Now, what's interesting is with Instagram, there are ways and means of, you can still print some of those smaller files. You just have to reduce the size of the overall print. You'll still get some good quality from them, you know, or utilize them in a collage. That's another good way to print the lower res files, because then you're printing a number of them on the canvas print or in the frame print, and they don't have to be at the very, very highest levels of photo quality.
Mm. And again, if people, because I there's a colleague of mine, Emer, here, and she ordered some of your prints as a gift, and they arrived in, she got them framed, and they were absolutely gorgeous. How long of a turnaround does it take? And, you know, you, like you mentioned there, that you're like, you cover the country, but like, how big an operation is it, and how long a turnaround does it take for those gorgeous prints to come out?
So typically it's 5 to 7 days. That's on our sort of standard dispatch, and we don't charge a delivery fee for that level of turnaround. We do have a faster and expedited service, which is typically 2 to 3 days. Mm. And yet there'll be a little bit of an extra charge for sort of jumping the production queue and getting your print that little bit faster, you know. So typically it's 5 to 7 days. The vast majority of our customers are happy to order on a 5 to 7 day turnaround and have free delivery. So, I mean, you know, we need roughly that amount of time, because there's a volume of orders going through the production system, and you've got to make sure that they're done right, and you've got to allow time for maybe talking to the customer and dealing with sort of, you know, production issues. So, so it's fast. I mean, you know, if you're ordering on a Monday, there's every chance that you'll have your print on the Thursday or Friday of that week, ready for the weekend. If you've got a if you're giving it as a gift, and many of our customers are ordering them as gifts.
Mm. Well, I am, as I said, I'm a big fan of photo printing. And I do think if we can shop local and, you know, support our local businesses, then everyone's a winner. The company again is The Canvas Works. You'll find them thecanvasworks.ie. For the moment though, Patrick, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jess. Thanks for having me.
Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Now, before we go any further, I want to remind you about a new 6-part series that is running here on News Talk. It's called Full Steam, and it's profiling some of the most interesting and influential people from the worlds of science, technology, engineering, arts and maths, all of whom just happen to be women. We are 3 weeks in, so over the past 3 weeks we have had conversations with Anne O'Leary, the CEO of Vodafone Ireland, Katrina Hallahan, the MD of Microsoft Ireland, and this weekend the interview with Helen Dixon, the Data Protection Commissioner, has gone live. If you missed any of the interviews, you'll find them up on newstalk.com/fullsteam. You can also search Full Steam with Jess Kelly in your podcast provider and it should appear. But here's just a snippet of my conversation with Helen Dixon.
I'm not particularly a game plan person, and okay, if you ask me now what's my game plan for 10 years time, there isn't one. I tend to focus very intensively and work hard at whatever job I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I will believe in whatever I am doing and what I can deliver out of it. And I think when you're responsible for managing a lot of staff, which I have been for a long time, I've had big teams, if the leader of the organization doesn't believe in what they're doing and isn't very committed to what they're doing, then I think it's very hard to bring staff along with you. So I had no game plan, but when I saw the job of Data Protection Commissioner advertised, it did really speak to me in terms of what the role is about. That idea that we have to use data and use personal data and use it to our benefit, but equally we have to respect the right of each individual to have their personal data protected, and where is the balance, and and how can we justify certain uses of personal data, and when should we not attempt to legitimize uses of personal data. So it really interested me in terms of where that balance is struck, and trying to bring clarity around all of those issues, which I've been trying to do for the last 4.5 years.
And it's really interesting. So since you took up this role, obviously the consumer has become more aware of the importance of their personal data, the protection, the privacy and the controls that they have, but also how it can be misused. Because for such a long time, sort of the trajectory of technology, consumer technology anyway, for to begin with, has been so great. We just wanted all of the new gadgets, all of the services, take all of my information, I'll tick every box, just let me have the apps on my phone. And then suddenly, like I was trying to pinpoint it in my own brain, I do think Cambridge Analytica was a big turning point for people.
I agree with you,
Because they sat up going, you what? How have you found it sitting in, you know, behind your desk and watching this transformation happen?
Well, I think it's all very positive in terms of that greater user awareness of, mm-hmm. of their rights, and also their need to be vigilant in terms of handing over their personal data in different circumstances. So I think the GDPR has been a huge boon for all of us. The timing has been good. It was adopted by the EU in May 2016, as you know, and then came into application in May 2018. So in the lead up to the GDPR, we saw really positive and massive engagement in Ireland, not just by companies and public sector bodies in terms of getting ready, which is important in terms of how they meet their obligations, but really the public has come hugely on board, and the media has as well.
The series again is called Full Steam. If you just search Full Steam with Jess Kelly on your podcast app, it should pop up, and I'd love if you subscribed, because we still have three excellent interviews to come over the coming weeks. But back to Tech Talk. A few weeks ago, I was in Cork in our Republic of Work studio, which is a gorgeous facility that we have, and I will be back down again very soon. But I also got to look around the Republic of Work offices. For those of you who don't know, it's in the heart of Cork, and it's a co-working space, a whole host of offices. And rather than me just talk you through what I think it is, I'm joined now by the CEO of Republic of Work, DC. DC, what exactly is Republic of Work?
So we like to call Republic of Work an innovation campus. That's a very fancy Cork way of describing. I guess we're a building that is obsessed with the future of work and the future of technology. So within the building, we have a kind of an airport style business lounge. We have a 250 desk co-working space. We have a kind of a meeting and event center, so we can do like little mini conferences and little mini events for about 150 people. And then we've like some private offices. And of course, then the jewel in the crown, our broadcasting studio down at the back of the second floor where I'm sitting at the moment.
It's a lovely facility, and I liked it because I could run my desk myself, which is a very technical thing that nobody else will get. But you get what I'm talking about, and that's all that matters.
It's funny. We have, you know, over the last few months, we've been lucky enough to have the whole spectrum of News Talk presenters in here. And yeah, it's great to see you all have your own little quirks in like how you like to do the radio.
We're all a pain in the hole. But anyway, so Republic of Work, like the Dublin example that springs to mind is kind of similar to, you know, like we have a lot of these co-working spaces whereby you would have companies who are there and that is their full-time base. And then you have people who can hot desk and so on. And it's a good facility to have in Cork, because Cork is not just a mini tech hub. It's like bubbling away, right?
Oh, it is. And I mean, that was the challenge. Like, so you mentioned my old alma mater, teamwork.com there. I worked like literally my job just before I set up Republic Work was the VP of growth and marketing in Teamwork.
Oh, no.
And the challenge for a lot of businesses is, you know, when you're doing something that's different, when you're looking to kind of, you know, you start off a business and it's you and, you know, a buddy. Mm-hmm. And like, especially these days with technology, you have no idea, like in 12 months, is it going to be still you and your buddy? Or, you know, are you the next Facebook and it's going to be, you know, 600 people with offices in 5 countries? Mm-hmm. So like the old Irish model or the old global model of, oh, I'll sign a 5-year lease or a 10-year lease to my office, that sort of stuff just doesn't work anymore, you know. So,
but also with the way rents are going, you know, if you spend the money on hiring a proper office block yourself at those early stages, that could, you know, kill your business before you actually get going. So to be able to have somewhere like Republic of Work where you can dip in, dip out, have a hot desk. Like I've used hot desk facilities in the Porter Shed in Galway before, and it's great just to be able to drop in.
It is. And it's, you know what it is too? I mean, we always kind of like to say, I suppose, it's about more than just the roof over your head. Mm. I mean, you know, there's nothing new about that concept. You have companies like Regus who are, you know, 30 years in business and have 6,000 spaces around the world. You know, their main business is, you know, giving you a comfortable office environment. I think the new generation of, you know, whether it's WeWork or Iconic Offices or Glendore in Dublin, or, you know, you've got places like Dogpatch Labs. The thing about them all is that it's about something a little bit more than just the space. It's about trying to put like-minded people in the building so that, you know what, you can, I mean, I guess the trick is you all learn from each other's mistakes then, you know. It's not this kind of, we have a building and it's all these private offices and, you know, you don't know what your neighbours are doing. You know, everybody, in a Cork phrase, everybody gets up in everybody else's business, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I like that. I'm all about that as well. Yeah. And so give me an overview, because as I said, we've had Teamwork work on, we've had a number of different companies who are sort of changing the game and they're based in Cork. It's not like they just have an office down in Cork, but you also have the big players. You've got like Apple and Dell EMC and all the rest in that vicinity. So there's a lot going on.
There's an awful lot going on. And like that's, I mean, it's a very unusual thing. We used to always, down in Cork here, when we talked about the tech industry, we used to refer to what we call the digital donut. And what that was, I mean, you know, it's like if you imagine, say, from a kind of a Dublin perspective, if, you know, if there was no tech companies in the city centre and if all the tech companies were just in Sandyford, Blanchestown, you know, Swords and Tala, that's what we had in Cork here for years. And the challenge with that is that information doesn't really flow around. So like a lot of people, and I suppose very much in mainstream business in Cork, nobody really knew, you know, about all these amazing giant multinational tech companies that were here, but even the startups and stuff. Like when I worked for the first startup, I kind of worked for Trustif.com here in Cork. Like we were up in Airport Business Park. So I mean, you know, you what's happened that's changed the game in the last 2 or 3 years is now it's completely reversed. And now, you know, if you want to have the sexy business in Cork, you're going city centre. It's a bit like when, say, in Dublin, when Grand Canal Dock got developed and suddenly, you know, that kind of re-energized that whole part of Dublin in terms of, you know, companies coming up. And now, you know, you've got the Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, all that stuff there. The same thing is happening in Cork. But it's what's amazing for us is that it's happening across the board. You're seeing the old juggernauts, as we call them, like the, I mean, you know, people forget that 2 years after Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak started Apple in Cupertino, 2 years later, they had an office in Cork. Like Apple are here 37 years. They're the city's largest employer. It's the only Apple-owned manufacturing plant in the world. They run Apple retail. They run like the amount, as somebody said to me once, if there's a problem with a new iPhone in China, nobody from California goes to fix the problem. You know, the problem is fixed by a Cork person getting on a plane and going over, which I find terrifying. But but you've got, that's led then to all these amazing startups. This week we had a fantastic event here in Cork. We had a RebelCon, like a software development conference. Like years ago, you would have never dreamed that happening. And now it was a huge event here this week, and it was kind of the only proper software development conference in Ireland. So like you're seeing, as you said, you're seeing not just kind of Cork catch up with Dublin, but you're seeing it in some ways, like you're seeing it actually get ahead of the game. You know, we've got amazing companies here. Like we've got Oculus, Facebook's Oculus, who are doing huge amount of research into VR and AR. And the reason they're doing it in Cork is because they originally acquired a Cork company called Infini LED. So, you know, it wasn't a kind of a random, we decided to come to Cork because the office was cheaper. They found an amazing Cork company, they bought it, and it became the core of the new Facebook Oculus company here, you know?
You're like the ultimate Cork ambassador. It's like, I already want to move down. But, you know, you mentioned there that not only are you just catching up with Dublin, you're kind of jumping ahead. Are you catching up and jumping ahead in terms of, you know, rent increases, pressure in that regard?
I suppose the honest answer is yes and no. I mean, the challenge is, yes, as Dublin kind of overheats, you know, there was a great, for years we had a great sales pitch here in Cork, which was, you know, come to Cork, we're not as expensive as Dublin. But I think what you're finding is it's not accelerating at the same pace. I mean, the challenges are the same. Like there is still the same housing shortage in Cork as there is in Dublin. But at the same time, the one thing I think that we have in Cork that's really helping us out is that we haven't gotten to that kind of, somebody described it really as like that zombie apocalypse survivor mode yet. You know, a lot of the big companies in Dublin, there's a lot of quite ruthless competition setting in terms of hiring and, you know, kind of poaching staff from different companies and stuff. Like from a Cork point of view, while you know, housing and salaries and all that are still a challenge,
yeah,
there's still a ferocious amount of cooperation going on, like between, you know, organizations like the Cork Chamber of Commerce and IT at Cork down here. There's a lot of, you know, kind of coming together to try and solve the problem as opposed to kind of picking on each other.
Yeah, but the nation's sweetheart, Jonathan Healy, took me on a walk around Cork the last time I was there, from your office, actually, from Republic of Work back to the train station. He just wanted to make sure I left. But as we were walking up, there's a lot of construction going on at the moment.
Big time. And it's I mean, look, it's the reality is it is so badly overdue. I mean, I remember I went to University College Cork and remember living in Dublin at the time of the whole Docklands redevelopment. So I actually used to live down the canal because it was the cheapest, worst part of the city to live in, and therefore I could afford to live there. And now, you know, you see what it's become. But I remember when I left, you know, they were talking about doing the Docklands in Cork and all this development, and, you know, kind of 15 odd years later, now it's only kicking off. But I mean, it's what's exciting for us in Cork here is it's the pace and speed that it seems to be going up. You know, it only seems like months ago when there's a big development down on the docks called Navigation Square. It's, you know, four blocks of, you know, probably each one would probably take 1,000 employees. Oof. Like, it feels like that was just going up. Now one block is finished and nearly fully occupied, and the second block is going up. And as you said, in particular, the area around Horgan's Quay, I mean, for the Cork equivalent is, you know, it's like our IFSC and Docklands area has literally been like land just empty for 20 years, and now all that land is all, so the whole actually city centre is nearly going to shift kind of right a little bit, if you know what I mean, when this stuff starts popping up.
It's exciting times, and I will be back down again very soon, because as you said, Fantastic. We do have our Cork studio in the Republic of Work. It's a gorgeous facility, and I love the use of nice coffee as well. Like, whatever about the technical and the stories, I'm there for the coffee alone. But thank you so much for hosting us and for your time. I'm sure you can give me a walking tour of the place next time I'm down there.
Exactly. Can't wait to have you down.
Brilliant. Thanks, DC.
Cheers, Jess.
Now, we're going to turn our attention to something a little bit different. And I'm joined now by Fionnuala Jones, who is a beauty, music and entertainment writer, talker, an all-around good egg, I suppose. Fionnuala, you're very welcome to Tech Talk.
Thanks a mil for having me, Jess. Really appreciate it.
So what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about skincare and sun safety. Now, you might think, looking outside, we're not getting much of a summer at the minute. Hopefully things will turn around. You might be inclined to not apply your SPF because you think there's no sun, I'm fine. That's not the case. The sun is there all the time, as are the UVA and UVB rays, so we need to be protecting ourselves at all times. So La Roche-Posay have come out with something to try and combat this issue of sun safety and this thing of not checking in with ourselves about it. It's called My Skin Tracker. It's a battery free wearable which basically tracks all these factors that are impacting us and our skin every day, and you can check it from an app. It's very, very handy.
So you're wearing the nifty little device there now. So it kind of looks like a button pin almost that you kind of have on a device that looks a little bit like a paperclip. I'm not doing it justice, and we will tweet out pictures so you can see it, but it's very neat. It's very small, and as you said, it pairs to your phone.
Very small, yeah. You can hang it on a necklace or on the waist of your trousers. You can wear it wherever. You don't need to charge it. It basically connects to your phone via Bluetooth. Mm-hmm. It connects to this app and it stores the data for up to 3 months. So you get live status updates of factors like your UVA, your UVB. UVA rays are responsible for like skin aging, and then UVB is the ray that's responsible for what we know in terms of skin cancers and skin illnesses. But it also tracks factors like pollen, which can cause skin inflammation, and humidity as well. All these things can aggravate skin, especially if you've underlying conditions as well, like psoriasis or anything like that, dermatitis. So it's very handy to just check in. If you're, say, you're kind of forgetful with reapplying your SPF, you can have a look. It'll tell you how far into like your max sun stock, which basically is the maximum exposure you can receive to all these factors before you're at risk of serious damage. So if you're forgetful and you need to be reapplying your SPF more, this could be your new best friend.
So I am one of those people, and I know people will text and tweet in now, giving out to me, and I'm not saying this in a braggy way, I'm saying it in a I know I'm an idiot. I don't apply SPF on a daily basis.
Yes.
I just don't. And like, there is SPF in my foundation, which I wear 3 out of 5 days. And again, I'm not lashing it on. So, and I don't reapply it during the day. So I am aware, like if I'm going on holidays, I won't go out for a second without SPF on. But again, like you said at the beginning, like right now we're sitting in Dublin too and it's cloudy and it's a bit grey. Now I can see the sun. The sun is coming through, but I don't think, oh God, I should have SPF on at all.
Now, obviously, if you're like covered up, which you would be on a day like today, like I'm wearing a full length skirt and a shirt, I'm not applying SPF all over my body because I'm not exposed. But your face is so important. Now, obviously, it's not as bad for you if you are applying foundation with SPF. That's good. But it is just that thing of you can't go anywhere without it, because even like the UVB is everywhere. Now, with the maximum sunstock thing, so I haven't been out that much today and I just scanned my phone there and I checked that I'm at my 20% max for UVA. So that's the ray for aging, which is mad. I have really not been outside that much. I walked from the bus to the office and I walked out onto the balcony to get a burger. That was it. I'm at like 0.5% for UVB, which obviously isn't as bad, but it just goes to show you are being exposed to it all the time and why it is so important. I spoke to a dermatologist before just in my work with beauty writing, and they recommended that if you are applying SPF, you need to be applying like a shot glass per application. So just as you said, if you're going on holidays, you shouldn't be coming back with a full or even like a half full bottle. You should be using it. And up to a factor 50, like obviously that goes without saying. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a tan, like put vanity aside, like health is wealth. Mm. Health is wealth.
It's terrifying to think like the levels that you said, again, on that short amount of time that you spent outside today, that your levels are there. I'm almost afraid to look at what my stats would be, because I, you know, we're being encouraged to, like, you know, get off the bus to stop earlier and walk in from a fitness point of view. So we are spending a lot of time out and about. And I just wonder about the damage being done to our skin. If you think about it, it is actually quite a serious issue.
Absolutely. Even yesterday I walked to top up my leap card or something. I think I walked maybe like 10 minutes down the road. I don't know what that is in kilometres or whatever. And I checked the app again and I said it to my housemates. I was like, I'm not expecting this to be in, like recording this at all. And I was at 100% for my UVA. It really puts it into perspective, I think, because it's easy for me or a dermatologist to sit here and be like, you need to wear your SPF every day. You need to be wearing factor 50.
Yeah.
But unless you see it, and this app really lays it out clearly in clear terms, the levels of exposures we are like putting ourselves through, I don't think people will be inclined to remember to put it on our face every day or bring a bottle with us or invest in proper skincare and skin protection.
It's so grim.
Yeah, it is grim.
Do we know how much these little devices are?
Oh,
we will find out.
We need to find out. Okay, yeah, but they're available in Apple stores and they're available on apple.com. they were launched in the US originally in November, so this is like very new to the market now, so could be the first one with one in your group of friends and set the trend.
It does make a lot of sense. Are we seeing more and more of these, like, because, you know, selling the notion of skincare, it like when you think of the ads, they're always very glamorous and very high end, whereas this seems to be like a basic thing of, if you're leaving your house, put your SPF on. It's kind of that fundamental. Are you seeing more tech being introduced into the beauty world to try and help people become aware of the benefits of using, whether it is a moisturiser or whatever the hell it is?
This is the first thing I've seen, and I can really appreciate it because it is practical and functional, but I think it actually does look nice as well. And I can appreciate that about it, that there is an aesthetic factor to it. I think it is really important, and I think it's something that companies should be looking towards, especially with the amount of time that we're spending on our phones and looking at beauty products on apps like Instagram. Like, I'm obsessed and it's all I ever watch.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to see them come out and talk about other things and other skin conditions and how we need to start investing from there and work from the bottom up.
Yeah. And actually, one other question about this device is, can you, like, is there any way to find out the benefit? Like, can you put in that you've topped up your SPF or like you've put on sun cream or anything like that? I mean, can you track it?
No, and they mention that in the app. So obviously they say that if you're regularly reapplying, that your max sunstock isn't necessarily going to be reflective. But at the same time, you need to use your own head there and proceed with caution. That doesn't mean because you're reapplying regularly, you shouldn't still be lying out in the hots of Spain for like 6 hours totally exposed. So again, it's at your own discretion, but it also gives you like your UV index, so it's like a scale of how low or high it is for the day, and it'll give you advice. And it usually is like, just put on sunscreen, which I think is very beneficial. Like today it is 3, which comes under the category of moderate. So it's telling me to put on my sunscreen and take precautions still, because I am at risk.
It's interesting, and again, because it's such a neat idea, and what I love is that you don't have to charge it, because I do think if it was another thing that I have to charge at night, like my phone and my wearable and whatever, I would not use it. But the fact that it just exists on a button pin, basically, you're totally fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And all you do to like get your status update is you put your, it's usually the top, I'm using an iPhone 7, so it's the top of my phone. Mm-hmm. You put it on, you hold it for 2 seconds, and then it will update. So you can do that whenever. It's very, very handy. And I agree as well. It completely takes the hassle out that you don't have to charge it or anything.
Yeah. Okay. I like it a lot. And just remind us of the name of it again.
It is the My Skin Track from La Roche-Posay, and you can get it in Apple stores and apple.com.
There you are. Fionnuala Jones, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the programme, you can listen back in full on newstalk.com. But don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Patrick Egan is up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.